It's an interesting dynamic when you hear people telling you a story and you realize they're getting personal. It's tricky sometimes. You need a little bit of finesse, but if you can just let them, just let the story out, and a lot of times you just let them talk. There's no recipe for it. You just kind of have to be in the moment when it happens, but there's something beautiful about getting people to tell you something that they feel comfortable enough to share with you, and those just become nuggets of gold for me and for my audience. And I always appreciate when those moments happen. They feel just like fleeting moments in time that I'm just able to capture, and that's just the beauty of podcasting as well.
Welcome to Between Two Mics.
I'm Zach.
And I'm Rock.
We're the co-founders of Squadcast.fm.
The best way to record remote interviews in studio quality like this one.
Here on Between Two Mics, we explore the challenges, opportunities, and new ideas with the people who are pushing the limits of what's possible in podcasting. Harry Duran is the host of Podcast Junkies, the author of Around the Podcast Campfire, the keynote speaker at this year's We Are Diverse Creators Summit, the founder of Fullcast, our good friend, mentor, and founding advisor of Squadcast. Harry Duran, welcome to Between Two Mics. This has been far, far too long in the making. So I want to start by hitting rewind and go all the way back to 2016 in Anaheim, California. You, Harry Duran, walk up to the Squadcast booth at Podcast Movement. And what's going through your head?
Just natural curiosity to see what people are doing in the podcasting space. There's a lot of repeat visitors, folks there, because at that point it had been my third Podcast Movement. And was it 2016, Chicago?
2017
in Anaheim. And I saw a company that I hadn't seen before with a couple of fresh young faces. And I was like, okay, no, you know, actually, you know what? I do have to give credit to Ryan Gray. Dr. Ryan Gray, as he's quick to remind me, brought me over or told me about them. He's like, you need to check out these guys if you haven't seen them. So it was a big room, because I remember there was a lot of space there for some reason, and like not like other and I think just the way the pavilion was set up, I remember walking a lot to see all the vendors, and I had always been a fan from day one of video for conversations, because I knew from day one, when I first got started with Podcast Junkies in 2014, I knew nobody knew who I was. And so I said, I want people to know me and build a relationship from jump. And I was even with the very, very first guest. And so that had been my MO for podcast recording, video, and then I only used the audio. And so I saw what you guys were working on, and I was like, well, this is really cool. And then, you know, probably what you guys even called like an alpha at the time. But I immediately saw I immediately saw the potential, because I feel like you got the building blocks there, the adherence to quality, the WAV file format, lossless, and then just having the interface. And I think the simplicity of it is also what attracted to me, because you weren't trying to like, I think there was still like the recording, I forgot what you guys called it at the time, the recording studio or the library or something other. I was like, yeah, forget about that stuff. Like, just get this part right. Get this part where you're enabling, facilitating, improving the quality of the podcast conversation in a way that is helpful for the host, and it's a seamless and easy experience for the guest. And I think we hit it off right away. And I think I felt like it was something that I wanted to continue to provide feedback on, and we were off and running.
Man, and I'm so glad, and we feel so fortunate that you did kind of take us under your wing and you know, teach us everything that you've learned in that amount of time that you spend in podcasting, and it's been awesome to still be collaborating with you years later, and here we are, and you know, thank you, man, thank you. It is long overdue. One of the questions I had for you though is we learned such a valuable lesson like so soon thanks to you, and which is focus, the value of focus, and really trying to be the best at that one thing, because that the original vision for Squadcast was a remote recording platform, right? But then we had other ideas and found other options or different paths, and the idea became a little bit inflated. And you know, we're still only not even a year in, and to learn that lesson, is that something that you see a lot of people fall into? Is that just something you've learned and learn to provide valuable feedback for? Because it's now I spot it as it's an easy thing to fall into, is what I'm trying to say. And we still have to fight and battle through it. And you know, I'm just so grateful, because it's good having a partner like Zach who can kind of pull each other out of it when we are getting distracted. Cause it happens to the best of us, but you know, it's very possible we wouldn't be here if it wasn't for that type of advice that you gave us. So I really do appreciate it.
Thank you. I think early on the reason I kept harping on that is because I didn't want you guys to be all things to everyone. I wanted you to be known as like the one provider. Like if you want to have the most seamless, high quality audio experience for your podcasts as a podcast host, and have that experience be translated to your podcast guest and demonstrate that you take the quality of your show seriously, then we are the place for you. And anything else that doesn't deliver on that promise is a distraction. And when it comes to tools and technology, we've all seen it so much that there our favorite tool that we use when we're getting started is so great because it does like one thing really, really well. And then they're trying to compete with others that are in similar veins. And so like, well, it doesn't do this one thing, but if we added it, then we can compete with this other thing. And then we start to, you know, just you get bloatware, and every software company has probably gone through the same experience where they're just trying to please everyone and they can't, and then they lose their core mission. And I think I've said it to, you know, repeatedly to you guys over the years, like, what do you want to be known for, you know, besides the technical pieces of like, we do X, Y, and Z, but you know, from a, you know, when we think about a client-centric mission, like what's the experience you want, you know, not what are the features, but what do you want clients to feel as a result of using, you know, whatever services it is you're providing. So if you focus on like the feeling that you want someone to have when they're done using or they've gone through the Squadcast experience, like, you know, that's something to always keep in mind, you know, and what I harped on back then and I continue to harp on.
Yeah, it's something that I'm, like Rock and our whole team, is grateful for. I think it set a tone of our culture early on as well, and it continues to help keep us focused. And your impact on the experience, the feelings that our product provides the podcast community and their guests, is just profound. It's prolific. It's everywhere. And we were meeting together pretty much weekly with feedback cycles and changes to the alpha and beta product for a long time. And it's only recently that we've had to kind of change our schedules up a bit. But because of that and that tight feedback loop, you, for me anyway, embodied the podcast community in a very efficient way in the early days to get feedback and to help shape our product. So I thought about trying to list all of the things that I could trace back to ideas or advice from you, Harry, and it's immeasurable. I've come to realize. So the biggest of them is, I think in my mind anyway, is progressive upload. I give you credit for being the originator of that idea, and is, you know, profound impact on our company's ability to deliver quality audio every time to our customers. And, you know, it was a fairly broad idea, but it was, I think, pretty magical because it was simple. And I think if I can paraphrase, you kind of asked the question when we were having trouble or it was taking a long time to upload these really big quality audio files, like, what's taking it so long? What's happening while we're recording? You know, we're talking for an hour. What's happening in the background there? And that was a really, really big question that I didn't have an answer to. So that set us on this journey of trying to make that happen. Turns out it led to a patent pending and this really key differentiator for us. So that's the big one in my mind. There's a ton of other things like treating your guests like gold. Like, how do we make that feeling? How do we empower that feeling in our product? Like, when it's a person having a conversation with another person, that's under our control. But how do we replicate that? How do we scale that? Mm-hmm. Little things like showing where people are at in the world, showing their local time. All of these different elements of the product are attributed to your advice. So I'm tremendously grateful for that. And, I think it continues even to this day. So I'm kind of failing to arrive at a question here, but I guess it's more so a celebration of gratitude for the impact that you've had with Progressive Upload and many other elements of the product.
Thank you for that. I appreciate it. And I'm grateful for the opportunity to have met you guys when I met you and, you know, the way everything works, in this world, like you meet the people you're supposed to meet at the time you're supposed to meet them, to do whatever it is you've set out to work on together. And I think, I felt like I knew that there was something out there that could be beneficial to the podcasting world. And then I think when I saw that you were as close, cause I've had conversations with other people about things that they're working on. And I'm like, oh, if you could guys could get your act together, this would be great for the podcasting community. But it felt like just the stars aligned when we started working together. And I realized that we were also thinking the same way. And I think your openness to accept a lot of feedback from stuff and just maybe even taking my word for it in the beginning, sometimes you're just like, well, you know, we haven't validated what Harry's saying, but it seems like good advice, so we're going to run with it. And maybe not even knowing if that was the right course of action. But I think what was important in the beginning is humanizing the both of you. And if you remember early on, I'm like, people need to know like who you are. Like, Squadcast is just another fly-by-night company until, you know, you literally come down to the bar at like, you know, 10 p.m. and just like have a drink with like Rob Walsh and at, you know, in the lobby, or just hang out and go out for, you know, bowling or the golf range or whatever else we've done in the past 2 years at these events. But I think it's something about involving yourself in the community, because what you've now I know have come to find is that it's really like a tight-knit community, and we all want to see each other succeed. And that translates within podcasts, but also people, you know, who have events and companies and services. Like, we all sort of like build this community of people, and then even people that have competing services, like with all the podcast hosting companies that are friends with each other. And I think it's just a matter of understanding like how Squadcast as a service and you guys as a family could join the podcasting family.
I'm really appreciate you pointing that out, because you're right. Like, you are so collaborative and giving, and we're not the first person who you've tried to approach and give ideas to and try to work with. But we, you know, not to pat ourselves on the back too much, but you know, we did listen, and it wasn't always the easiest thing to do you know, as much as this is business, it's very personal as well, because we have so much riding on this and so much wrapped into this. And so it is pretty cool to look back and see, you know, where we've come and how things have evolved and developed. And that's something I kind of want to peel back on a little bit for our audience, because I'm sure many of them are familiar with you. Like Zach said in the introduction, you're the host of Podcast Junkies. You're the founder of Fullcast. You've been doing it for a while now. Like, you know, so walk our audience members who aren't familiar with you through, like, what is What does Harry Duran do in podcasting? From his words, from the mind of Harry.
Yeah, it's so interesting how I ended up here, because my background, I was in corporate for like over 18, 20 years, maybe. I worked at JP Morgan Chase. I worked at E-Trade. And, you know, when I started the corporate gig, I got to early on, I think I was like 22, like I didn't even graduate college. I got a full-time job as a bank teller, and I got to wear a suit to work. And I was like, yeah, I made it.
I was like that too.
Get to wear a suit. That's official. You know,
yep.
are good to go. And
you're so, somebody now.
Yeah, I'm somebody now. And then quickly got promoted, because I mean, I was just like, I was so naturally curious, inquisitive. And I got promoted to like the teller that manages like the higher profile accounts. And then my what I came to call my corporate godfather. He's like, what are you doing here? Because it was like clear that I was just like, there was this one exercise one time when they wanted us to like, remember each client's name that would come to the window. And I was just like, how am I going to remember these people's names? And I was working the corporate window, so payroll and all that sort of stuff. So every person that showed up, I'd be like, this is their company name, and this is Rock. And then this is like ABC company, and this is Zach. And I'd create a list. And then when they'd show up, I'd get their check. I'd see what the company is, and I'd be like, oh, hey, Zach, how are you doing? And he'd be like, oh, you know, and be like so amazed that they remember their name. And I remember my boss come by. He's coming to say hi to all the tellers. And he saw me with this list of like 20 names. So initially his security and privacy flag is like going off or something. Like, what the hell is this guy doing? Like writing all the customers' names down. And I was like, oh, no, we've been instructed to sort of like, you know, have this policy that we're trying to remember greet clients by their name. And he was like, oh, and that was for him, the sign that's like, oh, this person thinks differently. And then I became like on the sales side, opening up accounts. And then he took me off to like 3 or 4 different projects. And so always advancing. When I made my first 6-figure salary, he was like, oh, you're in the like top 10% of all income earners. Like, congratulations. So all these like milestones that make you think that you've made it. Mm-hmm. But I think it was just, it wasn't as one of those lemonade stand when I'm like 13 stories and I'm just like, or I'm a solopreneur and I could never work for anyone. I've never had a full-time job. Like, I'm not one of those guys with one of those stories, because I did. Like, I think coming from immigrant parents, I was born in El Salvador. Like, I came here when I was a year old. And my dad, God bless my parents, like, you know, what they did, you know, at an age much younger than I am, and, you know, just... I was, you know, my mom came here, and I had an older sister that passed away when she was 9 from leukemia. Like, and so like whatever their journey was, it's so like, I probably don't give them as much credit. And I'm sure most kids don't give their parents enough credit for all the things they do. But his dream was for like, get the corporate job, like get the 9-to-5. So they were really happy that I'd gone through all that, but I always had security. Like an entrepreneurial spirit. Yeah. I grew up DJing vinyl. Turntables, like legit. If you ask me for like memorable moments in my life, one of them is actually the moment I learned to beat match to vinyl records side by side. And I was like, holy shit, like it's like I can magic. Do that. It's magic. Yeah, when you feel like you can do it. Now people like laptop DJs, they just press the beat match button, cheaters. and so, but I have laptop DJ now, but I pre-qualify as saying I learned on vinyl. So,
Street cred.
Well, what was interesting to kind of begin to tie things together is, I remember when I first saw like friends of mine that were slightly older DJing parties, and I was like blown away by, they essentially controlled the rhythm of the party. Like that one person sitting there with the turntables was just like dictating like a conductor, like if the party sucks, if there's people dancing, if there's people not dancing, it is like literally all on him or her. Just like, and the rhythm and the flow and just like slowing it down and like, you know, getting people to throw their hands up in the air and just like, and then the slow, you know, back in the day, the slow dance and all, just like orchestrating like the whole 4 or 5 hours of an evening. And I was always fascinated by that. And I was just like, the minute I could learn how to do that, I started doing that and been DJing forever. And I even learned electronic music production as well. So, around 2013, I created a mobile app called Know Your DJ. And it was my passion of going to festivals and not really knowing if the DJ that was playing, like I knew him by name, but not by face sometimes, because I would just know their DJ sets. And so I was like, what if I created an app like for Pandora, but for electronic music? And so I created Know Your DJ. My friend helped with the technology and I did all the marketing and UX UI. And then in 2014, I went to New Media Expo in Las Vegas. It was at the time, it's probably dating the nature of the conference, but it was for podcasters, bloggers, and YouTubers. And that's where I met a lot of, this is the first time I went to a conference of that nature, because I'd gone to like other conferences for work, like business intelligence conferences. And I said, I'm going to start a podcast. And then Pat Flynn was there speaking. Amy Porterfield was there, Scott Stratton. And I was just like, wow, look, oh, Cliff Ravenscraft as well. And then I remember someone mentioning the term podcast junkies, or and me thinking, oh, I'm a podcast junkie, because at that time I was learning about mobile apps. And I had, you know, like 20 or like podcasts that I was listening to, because learning about alternative health. And this is like 2013, you know. And I was like, what if I started a show? I studied a little bit of acting as well. So, you know, if anyone's keeping score of all the things I've tried, I'm like all over the map. But there's a show called Inside the Actor Studio with James Lipton. And I was like, what I loved about that show is it just kind of like show the actor in like just a different light, like personalize them and just tell the story behind the actor, right? And I was like, what about that for podcasting? That's Podcast Junkies. It's essentially like, I call it the podcaster's voice. It's like what happens when the mic is off and you can hear like what, how they got started, what inspired them. Cause I wanted, it's interesting cause I think about it. I wanted to learn like how, what makes a podcaster's mind tick. Cause I was learning how to podcast and I was just like, well, why don't I just learn as I go and ask some of the most influential people that I know, or if they'll, you know, give me the time to talk to them. So in the beginning I was interviewing like Gary Leland, I was interviewing Rob Walsh, I was interviewing Elsie Escobar, like all the OGs, you know, Rob Greenlee, like just asking them like, what, like what's, how'd you get started? And, you know, I, you know, people think I'm OG cause I'm 2014, but like Elsie is going back to like 2006, like, you know, 2008, yeah. Some of these folks, and thankfully Jordan Harbinger has been doing it for a long time. And I got to interview Pat, which was nice, came full circle because he inspired me to start it. And then I got to have him on the show. And now he's one of the advisors for Squadcast as well. So with Jordan, so that's even crazy full circle. But it was just interesting because then when I would go to the conferences, because I was doing video at the time, I was using Skype with Call Recorder. And I said, these people don't know who I am. So I want to, as I alluded to at the top of the show, just say, hey, this is, you know, I want to learn, I want to build a relationship with you. So when I go to the conferences, they'd be like, hey, Harry, I really enjoyed our conversation. And just, and then I had an idea from Michael O'Neill with the Solopreneur Hour to create the shirts, the now bright yellow shirts that everyone's familiar with at Podcast Junkies. A little bit of an investment for me. I'd have to buy those like 50 or 100 of those shirts and just hand them out. So that's the one thing. It does work. So that's the one thing I miss doing. And now hopefully when we get back to live events, I'll probably have to order 200 at this point, but it's a nice way to give back to the community. And then I hired a business coach about a year in, a guy that I've been working with, Taki Moore, is a good friend of mine. We're actually producing his show. He runs a program called Black Belt, which helps coaches move from one-to-one to one-to-many. And when I, the minute I, at the time, it was like, it's a high-end coaching program. It's $1,500 a month. Like, it's legit serious, like, investment. But yeah, what I realized, it was a giant step. It's coming from corporate. I was like, I have a little bit of money. I want to invest. And I understand from day one the importance of coaching. Like, Tiger Woods has a coach. Like, literally, like, if you want to get to the next level, get help from someone who can get you there. And I even told him, I was like, I'm not coaching at the time, but I think you can help me, because I went to one of his live events in California, and I just started working with him. And the minute I stepped into that room, I was like, holy shit, like I'm in deep water here, because these people that I know now and I'm friends with, people like Todd Herman, and who are running like these high-end programs and like seven-figure businesses just remotely with small teams, I was like, where am I? Like, how did you do this? Like, I was blown away. I tell people, it's like I walked into like Narnia, the closet, and I walked into the world of digital marketing. And I was just like, wait, like landing pages, sales pages, like funnels, like just all the jargon terminology. But just the fact of like what they were able to accomplish and the freedom that they had to do what they wanted to do. And, you know, I cashed out my 401k for a second time. And I was just like, I basically, it's, people always get the metaphor wrong. I don't, it burned the boats, you know, like they said that, I forgot which explorer was that did it. But I think he just scuttled them.
Cortez.
I don't think he actually burned them. I think he just scuttled them. But the idea is just like no looking back, right? I was like,
right,
you know, I can't have a plan B, because if I have a plan B, I'm going to go back to it in case this doesn't work out. It's one of the hardest things I've ever had to do. Like, so then a year and I started full cast. I came up with the idea in Black Belt. I was like, these people like need a high-end service because they're already paying high-end, because, and they understand the value of having someone partnering with someone. When you're at that scale and you want to grow, the question you should be asking is not how do I do this, is who? Like, who can do this for me? Mm-hmm. Like, then I quickly realized, like, oh, they just want a partner that can help them focus on their genius. Like, there's four types of tasks. Those are incompetent at, those are competent at, those are excellent at, and your genius. And incompetent, competent, obviously get them off your plate as soon as possible. And that's why people have housekeepers come to their house, because they're like, they don't want to be sitting there cleaning their house, right? But excellent, you know, those skills are like, for me, it was a little bit of web design, like HTML, CSS. I can do some of that. Like, I learned a little bit. And then there was the one day I was like sitting in there working on my website. I spent like 6 hours trying to fix something in my sidebar. I'm just like, I'm losing my mind here. I called a web development friend. He literally like logged in and fixed it in like 15 minutes. I was maybe even less, maybe even 5 minutes. I don't know. It was like so fast. And I was like, holy shit, that's your genius. I was like, this is what you do better than anyone. And I realized I need to like do for my clients like what is like, my genius is helping them create compelling content. Their genius is creating content, like even being the best coach that they can be, or creating the best solo content they can to teach their audience. And I was like, just do that. Don't ask me how to create, edit audio. Don't ask me how to create graphics. Don't ask me like how to post on your socials. You shouldn't be asking me that. Let me do that for you. Let me be your partner. Let me get you there and let's work together on this. And I'll just make sure I continue to make you look and sound good. And so that's been the driving force of what we do, just creating, you know, empowering the people that we work with to have them, you know, focus on their genius. And it's just, and then I realized I had all the experience of Podcast Junkies, all the things I did on my own, the bootstrapping stuff I did to like market the show. I mean, I had production skills because I learned how to master audio when I was doing my electronic music production. So I was literally editing shows with Ableton Live, which is way overkill because it's like,
yeah,
that tool is made for like producing like electronic and music tracks. we now occasionally use Hindenburg, but it was just like what worked and what can I apply what I learned to help my clients succeed. And that's the journey we've been on. And then just been started doing some work as I started to develop relationships in the community. Episode, I think we're at 230 roughly in the past 6 years. And it's just been an incredible, incredible ride. I can't believe so much time has passed. But, you know, the podcasting community is like family to me now.
Yeah, I often tell people that we were terrified coming into the community like the day before the drive down to Anaheim. We had no relationships or awareness or how the podcast community operated or worked or, you know, who was who. I mean, a little bit, but we personally, you know, didn't know anybody personally. So I always tell people it's incredibly open and welcoming and friendly. And a lot of that I think is because of how we met and because of how that first event went and every event thereafter that the community shows up and collaborates with one another. It's true. So before we move too far past full cast, though, you have a number, you've worked with a number of amazing clients and creatives. So you want to list some of those for our listeners?
Yeah, I think early on there were folks within that Black Belt community that I got to work with, and Taki Moore has like been a really like a brother. He's like a brother to me now, and he's based out of Australia. He's got a group called a podcast called Million Dollar Coaches. But early on, I was in New York at the time. We got to work with a company called MediaMath. It's a digital programmatic marketing agency. We got to work with Dun & Bradstreet, which was interesting at the time. So it was nice to get some high visibility clients in the beginning. We've worked with Olympic medalists like Samantha Peshek, they won the silver medal in the 2008 gymnastics. Who knew gymnastics was a vibrant and rabid community? Yeah. So she had a lot of success with her show, 250,000 downloads after two seasons. We worked with K-Swiss in Los Angeles. I literally was sitting in the same row as the president of K-Swiss at a Gary Vaynerchuk event. And then there was a lot of younger folks there. And so Gary's like, who's over 30? Who's over 40? And it's like me and Barney. Barney, where's that? I'm like, I was like, thank you for not making me look too old there. And I didn't know who he was. And he's like, oh, I'm the president of K-Swiss. And I was like, oh, okay. And I was like, do you have a podcast? And he's like, yes. And so basically we were off and running from there. Yeah, just, you know, clients that are doing just solopreneurs, clients that own like financial services companies, just anyone who's really has an audience with a specific message for them. And what I'm clear of when we work with clients is that like, what's the one thing you want a listener to do as a result of having listened to your episode? Because we don't create like hobby shows. We could, if you have the money and you just have nothing else better to do and you want to create a show about, your paint collection or whatever it is your hobby is. But I think, we just pride ourselves on working with businesses who, you know, want to tell the story about their company or want to get a word out about either services they offer or teachings that they provide in another format. And I think those have been like the clients that have had the most success with us that are clear about the message that they want to deliver.
Yeah. What's something that you find yourself telling your clients consistently that you think podcasters in general can just benefit from?
I think what is a common theme is to always keep the listener in mind, and whether it's everything from what we're doing in the beginning, like we set up an episode zero for them, and I'm sure listeners here will know, but it's essentially your podcast trailer. It's how you're introducing the world to your podcast, and it's, you know, who you are, why you started the show, what was the motivation, what listeners can expect, you know, a sneak preview if you've already recorded some episodes, you know, mix some of those in, what's the frequency of the show, what's the rollout going to be, and you're setting the tone, because what you're doing in episode zero is getting yourself into the habit of constantly communicating to your listeners what to expect. And, you know, some guests, some clients, sometimes they want to pause their show or they're just two seasons. And I'm like, you can do whatever you want. You're the station manager. You're the producer. You're the executive director. You're the social media director. I mean, we help with a lot of that sometimes, but just communicate to your audience. Like, let them know we're going to take a pause. We're going to change the format. We're going to launch the show. It's going to be a weekly show, but in the beginning, we're going to do two episodes for the first month. And then we're going to settle into a weekly cadence. So get yourself into the habit of realizing there's like someone else listening to you. 80% of podcasts are consumed on mobile, so they're on the go, they're listening in the mobile device. That's why we use and recommend like high quality equipment. It doesn't have to be high priced. I mean, this shout out to the team at Samson who, you know, made a nice alternative to the ATR, the Samson Q2U, and it's just fascinating to think of having a resource like that available, because I think the price has gone up now because it's so popular and it's in demand. I think it's like 80 or 90 bucks now, but it used to be 60. But realize that there's always this communication you're having with your listener. I tell people when it comes time to a conversation, there's the guest, there's the host, and there's the listener. There's three people involved in every conversation. And so if you and I are having a conversation, there's the three of us, but we need to take into account the listener. Like you, the listener, like I'm literally talking to you right now. Like, thank you for listening to this podcast and hearing my story. Yeah, we appreciate you. And we appreciate the fact that you've listened to, you know, between two mics for as many episodes you are. And if you're one of the people that have listened to every single episode, then let Zach and Rock know on Twitter. Pause this and send a tweet out. So just little things like that. You can have fun. I've seen people record like Easter eggs at the end of their episodes where they'll let a little bit of silence go, but then the episode hasn't ended. So if you're paying attention, you'll see that there's like 10 seconds left and you're like, you keep playing it. And there's like, hey, like you pull like Ferris Bueller and just be like, you still here? Like here's an Easter egg. And so I created something called the retention hashtag on Podcast Junkies. It's just like something. I just create a hashtag related to the episode. And I'm like, if you made it to the end, just tweet it put it on Twitter and just let me know that you did. So again, just a reminder to build that relationship. Don't try to be perfect. I've had everything from like dogs barking to like the UPS guy show up in the middle of an interview and I stopped the interview. I went over to answer the door and I'm like, oh, the UPS guy is here. All that was recorded, by the way, because what I didn't do was edit it out of my episode. I don't know how I missed it. It must have just been like I was in the middle of an editing and I just completely forgot, but basically, or forgot to review. But that whole piece, my guest, I forgot who it was. He actually got on the phone, made a phone call. It's all recorded through Skype. And so you can hear him calling his friend on the podcast episode. You hear me going to get the package, coming back. And so funny because I think my friend Jason Bryant called it out. He's like, I know you're trying to be like real, but like, did you mean to leave all this in the middle of your episode? I was like, no, I didn't. So, but that's the extreme. But I'm just saying, like, when I hear a dog barking or I see a dog jump on someone's lap, the guest is like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. And I'm like, no, what's the dog's name? They're just, we'll give him a shout out on the episode. So, and I think COVID also recording this mid-August 2020. And I think, made us realize that we're all just human beings. You know, we go back home and we live human lives and, you know, we have people that we live with and, you know, we're trying to do the best we can, but none of us is living a perfect NPR style life. And I think to the extent that we can do that, we just relate better with our audience.
Yeah, it's great times. And, you know, we're grateful to play some kind of part in that and the culture within the podcast community. This show, of course, is about celebrating the folks that are helping define podcasting and move it forward. And while I'm at it, thank you for pushing us to start this show. We've been at it over a year now, but I think you were the catalyst to a large extent. I think it was always part of the plan, but doing it is a different story. So we appreciate that.
I have to, as much as I want to resist putting my host hat on when I'm being interviewed on other shows, I'll ask one question, and it's, how have you guys grown as hosts since starting the show?
Like lots of ways. Yeah. Lots of ways. I certainly pay much more attention to conversations that are not recorded, in just real life, right? And try to take the lessons learned from these formalized recorded conversations and bring those listening skills and those skills of pausing for effect and pronunciation and just a number of aspects of what keep a conversation flowing, having thoughtful questions and being curious, and applying those in everyday conversations is something that I've noticed have a pretty big impact on how the conversations that I have go. Certainly there's a lot of the logistics and mechanics that go into, consistently producing an episode and publishing and, all of those things. But, pay attention, and we're very much students of the remote aspect of what helps people stay engaged and flowing in a conversation. And those lessons come to life through the product in a number of different ways. So what do you think, Rock? I know you have an answer to this as well.
Yeah, I've certainly learned the power of asking good questions, asking a lot of questions, and just how that can really get someone to lighten up, illuminate, I guess. And there's like certain, sometimes it's more subtle depending on the individual where you can see that light up happen. With you, Harry, it's much easier and you can hear it in your voice. But some people it's much more subtle, and then kind of finding that opportunity to explore that more, is something that I probably have learned to embrace and carried over to, you know, regular interactions and conversations outside of being behind the mic. And then also, I think just learning to have fun with it, embrace it, not worry about how I sound or am I going to say the exact thing in the exact moment. Because whenever I do try to do that, and don't get me wrong, preparation is very important, but, you know, always thinking about saying the perfect thing and wanting to appear smart or just precise, like it's certainly something that I want to be, and I have a tough act to follow because Zach is so good at that stuff, but also just learning to be okay with whatever happens with whatever I throw out there, and that as long as I'm having fun and do a little bit of preparation, it's a good time. So that's the other thing. I used to get really nervous and like, you know, just be so afraid of it being boring and, you know, I wasn't having fun. So I'm, you know, learning to have fun, I think is a big part of this. And I think that's the, what we try to put into Squadcast too, is like one thing that we never want to lose sight of is like making this fun. Podcasting should be fun. Having a conversation with somebody who you maybe look up to, or certainly there's certainly a reason why you're interviewing them on your show. That should be fun. So I'm learning to have a lot more fun, and it's crazy how it's helped me out in other aspects of life that I wasn't expecting, even though it makes sense now. I just wasn't expecting that.
Yeah, so true, because you do pay more attention to like when folks are being interviewed or when they're doing it bad too, like when people interrupt other people and just like, don't do that.
Absolutely.
Let people talk. So yeah, it's helpful.
Yeah, it really is. And try to bring a lot of those lessons into the experience to help conversations flow, with technology being helping that. And I think, you know, advice from you that's constantly in the back of my mind is not distracting people, right? Mm-hmm. And we see that in advice for silencing your phone and some of the, you know, best practices that that people share. But actually, like, designing for that, you know, is a different thing altogether. It's something that I'm grateful for you having such a big impact on the product, on our podcast. And the other aspect that I'll finish my answer to your question with is a thing that has really helped me be a better host is guesting on other people's shows, being a guest on lots of other podcasts, which is something that we're doing a lot of these days, thankfully. And I have a tremendous amount of empathy for guests, and especially for like first time guests. It is to get kind of thrust into this world and just, you know, click a Squadcast link and now your voice is all over the world is kind of a trip to think that that's possible and that we can empower that in some way. So I know you are a guest on a lot of people's podcasts and you talk to a lot of podcasters. So in some ways we're kind of spoiled with our interviews because we get to interview professionals, right? Yeah. And there's a lot to be learned from that. So I love it when our guests ask us questions because more often than not, their podcast hosts as well. So I'm sure that happens on your show all the time where it's also helped with interviews for bringing on team members for Squadcast. Like everybody's done job interviews, right? So there is some overlap there. It's not exactly the same, but certainly it occurred to me when we were hiring for two positions ago, it occurred to me that I was paying attention to the answers in the same way of the candidate as the same way I do when I'm talking to people like yourself on our podcast. So I think that that's a real skill as well that that has transcends into real life and in ways that you don't really realize until, you know, it's happening. So that's many benefits of podcasting. And you touched on one earlier that I think is less obvious, but it seems like it was obvious to you from the get-go. And that is the personal connection and networking benefits of being able to see somebody and talk with them and build a real life connection, even when you're not in the same place and recording in the same studio. So we've, again, taken some of that advice and lessons learned and made it really, made the conversation in Squadcast before and after your recording just as good and engaging because of some of that, some of the stories that you told us early on. But it sounds like you knew that before you started podcasting, and we talked to podcasters who've been doing it for, you know, 100 episodes or something like that. And it's like, oh yeah, there are networking opportunities before and after. So how was that intuitive to you?
I'm trying to think about It's interesting because my first guest, as regular listeners will know, is Chase Reeves, who is, if anyone hasn't ever heard Chase speak, he's just like an explosion of energy and just like spontaneous combustion. And he's got his own YouTube channel, and he like rates like everything from like backpacks and just random. He's one of the co-founders of Fizzle, which is a service for helping entrepreneurs. And so I was kind of in like the community early on, and I remember I think it helped. I think it might have been the acting, if I think about it, because I studied acting for about 3 years. Shout out to one of my classmates, Otto Asando, who I occasionally see in movies pop up. Now I'm like, ah, it's my friend Otto, ATO, like Asando. Like he was in one of the Bourne Identities, and he's in a couple of movies. But it was exciting because it's one of the first times I got put out of my comfort zone. Like we had to do scenes like in this little black box, like almost like a classroom sized room. And he's like, okay, in this scene, you're like in your boxers and you have to like sleep in the bed with this woman. And there's like 20 of your classmates, like literally like on top watching you. And you just really have to get comfortable with being uncomfortable. And so I remember when I went to see Chase speak, I think it was at New Media Expo, and he was speaking about Fizzle. And I was talking about my mobile app, Know Your DJ, and I sat next to the microphone that they put in the middle in the aisle, right? Because you know there's that microphone they put there, like whenever you're ready to ask a question. And I said to myself, like, oh, I want to be next to the mic so I can be the first one to stand up and ask the question. And I have no idea what the question is going to be, but I'm just like, I gotta do it. Like occasionally, and I would do this in class sometimes. I would sit in the front, because I knew I was forced to pay attention, you know. So sometimes when I go to a conference or I'd go see someone speak, I would force myself to pay attention by sitting in front. So along those lines, I was like, I remember like Chase, like, does anyone have any questions? And I got up and I was like, I kind of made it up on the spot. And then I leveraged that later on to say, hey, Chase, thank you for that answering my question. Would you like to be my first guest on the podcast? And now something fun that I do is like every 100 episodes, like he comes back. So he's been on episode 100. He's been on one episode 100 and episode 200. And he's just going to come back on episode 300, 2021 or whatever it is. So, and just, even if he never has a podcast, I don't even, he still has a podcast or whatever he's doing, just to have that nice thing. But there was something in me that said, like, I want to build a relationship. And I just knew audio wasn't going to cut it, because like, it's not like you're going to recognize someone's voice because you spoke to them for an hour. And then there's just something powerful about having that face-to-face human connection. And I think I knew at that point that I wanted to just not have a podcast for the sake of podcasting. I mean, the fact that I started it and I knew I was going to interview podcasters, I said, like, I really need to figure out how to, you know, develop a relationship with this community. And that's why it stood out for me as the best way to do that. And there was something I think later on that I felt was important about having the face-to-face, you know. Rock touched on it a little bit, just the seeing the reactions, you know, seeing what happens when you ask a tough question, when people are silent. It's because they're thinking, like, you know, when someone's thinking, they do that tilt of the head and they're looking up, they're just like, and they're thinking, how do I want to answer this question? Do I want to give the quick answer, but like, yes, let's move on? Or do I have an opening to kind of reveal a little bit of myself? And, you know, I don't set out to get people to reveal personal details about their life. But if I'm if I'm empathetic and I'm naturally curious, and I really am creating a safe space for my guest, you know, I want them to see that, like, look, I'm interested in your story, and I, like, I want to, you know, I want you to tell me what's important for you and how you got to this point. And they don't all end up down that path where they're just like, well, I never told anyone. But obviously, you know, any decent podcaster, you know, likes to hear when someone said, no one ever asked me that before, you know, or I never shared this story. And, you know, Gary Leland told me, we were on the phone talking for almost over an hour. And he's just one of the best storytellers ever. And towards the end, and towards the end of the, have you guys had him on?
No, not on the show, but we've had breakfast with him, and he was telling us stories about how he used to smoke cigarettes in high school, because it was cool back then, and his parents were you know, smokers and just great storyteller, though. I'm not doing it justice.
Get him on if you can. He told me this one story.
He's fun.
He used to play around with his friend, and I think he was like 8 years old, and I think it was his father's or someone's car. Anyway, they get into the car. Underneath the seat, there's a gun. There's a loaded gun. And he's like, he took the gun out and he basically pointed at his friend. He's like, bang, bang, you're dead. And then he came to find out later that the gun was actually loaded and it was like the safety was on it. And just for what it wasn't meant to happen, but he basically And so I was just like sitting there just like, and it's an interesting dynamic when you hear people telling you a story and you realize they're getting personal. It's tricky sometimes, but and you need a little bit of finesse. But if you can just like in a way like let them just let the story out, and a lot of times you just let them talk, you know, or just like tell me more about that. You know, it's there's no recipe for it. You just kind of have to be in the moment when it happens. But there's something beautiful about like getting people to tell you something that, you know, they feel comfortable enough to share with you, and that does just become like nuggets of gold for like me and for my audience. And so I always appreciate when those moments happen. And it's just, they feel just like fleeting moments in time that I'm just able to capture. And that's just the beauty of podcasting as well. One of my clients is interviewing his father, who is an author, and his father lives in Hawaii and he lives in Atlanta, and his father is probably like 70 or something. I don't know if he's still a professor, but he realized like he wanted to have these conversations with his father because at some point his father's going to be gone. And he just wants to hear the story of how he, you know, the books that he wrote one book, and he's just a well-renowned scholar. Actually, Natalie, my partner, learned from him in Hawaii. So that's how we all got connected. But I think the value of a podcast as a way for like capturing these time capsules of like moments in time. And I think there's a lot of that happening right now. And there's a lot of people that are on podcasts. You know, what's the first thing that happens when like someone like Robin Williams passed? So all the hosts that interviewed Robin Williams are like, whoa, like I didn't realize like that was the last time we'd be able to hear his voice. And so I think if every podcaster went into their conversations understanding that there's a potential for magic happening, if you open yourselves up to it, I think, you know, it's a great way to start a conversation.
So what keeps you podcasting, Harry? Because you've been doing it for a while now. You certainly, you know what you're doing, but it doesn't seem like you've lost any of your enthusiasm or passion. And I know you got another podcast project that is certainly interesting that you're working on. But yeah, what keeps you podcasting, man?
I think it's having a business that's built around podcasting, being in a community that's, you know, all podcasters. It's one of those crafts that, you know, I always butcher the saying, but it's one of those, like it takes years to learn, but a lifetime to master, or something along those lines. But it's just one of those things that I'll never be the perfect podcast host. But I think it gives me the opportunity to practice, you know, that skill of like how to be a host. And just sometimes like you do lose a little bit of energy, but like I get excited that hour that I have with a new podcast guest. And I love having the platform. I just had a guy by the name of Tyler Martin on my show, and he's got a podcast called Have a Blessed Gay. And it's a mix of like spirituality and sexuality and religion. Awesome. And
That's podcasting, baby.
Yeah.
But he literally cold emailed me and I was just like, I looked at the show and I was like, and he was so sincere, and I was like, yeah, let's do it, man. Like, and it's just having the platform, the ability to do that, and they're appreciative. I mean, I sometimes underestimate how much people like appreciate my show if you're a podcaster, because I'm always grateful for like whenever I literally hear like a new review or someone mentioned like, I love your show. It's like, whoa, I never take any of that for granted. Mm-hmm. And so it keeps me humble, I think, is part of it, like to know that I can, this little show is popular for new podcasters who want to learn. People have used it for research when they've got upcoming guests. They're like, oh, I want to go listen to your episode with Arnett Lopez, and I wanted to learn more about him. So I'm glad that my show can do that. And so it keeps me connected to the podcasting world and allows me to also like surface new and upcoming podcasters, and then like reach out to like super established people, you know, and I'm grateful to have a show that can do both. It's just a great way to continue to have conversations and stay on top of what's happening. Cause now I interview like, you know, people that are doing cool things in the space, you know, like I had Andrew Mason on from Descript a couple of times. I've had Amir Veliani from Glow, the folks from Breaker on, and so many people doing cool things. And now to have a platform that allows me to like to have conversations with those. I just had Nick Kwan, Hot Pod News. That just really, that was great because I've been a fan of his for a while and his newsletter. And just Brenda Salinas Baker from Google, and they reached out to me to be on the show. It's just like I got to figure out what's going on. James Cridland has been on recently as well. So just I get to speak to people that I admire in the space, people who shows I think are super interesting. And I think it just keeps me on my toes at the end of the day.
And tell us about what you got in the works with your new project.
So part of what we do at Fullcast is we're full service podcasting agency. And what's helpful is what I always wanted to see is if there's an ability to, it was a thought experiment. Can I build my own client? One of my clients here in Minneapolis gifted me a book called Abundance by Peter Diamandis. It's a fascinating book. It's just a whole picture of like what the future is going to look like. And it delves into all these like nanotechnologies. There's a chapter in there about vertical farming, which sent me down a rabbit hole. And I was like, oh, vertical farming is fascinating. And I started looking, it was going to be like a $14 billion industry. So I was like, I'm going to create a show like with zero audience and just build a whole platform around it. So I grabbed all the social media channels and I created the Vertical Farming Podcast. Now, helpful tip for business owners or anyone starting a podcast, don't underestimate the SEO power of a title. Mm-hmm. Too many people get too fancy and they're like, the cool kids podcast or, you know, the super geniuses like show. Like, no one is searching for those terms. And with a million podcasts plus in the podcast, Apple Podcast directory, like, you need to let people know what it is they're going to get from your show just literally by reading, you know, the name of your show would kind of be helpful. And so, because we're business focused, if you have a fun show or a hobby show or something like that, or something for your business, it may or may not fit, but we try to be thoughtful about that. So I literally called it the Vertical Farming Podcast. Like, I'm not trying like be fancy, and it literally is what it is. And I started reaching out to founders and CEOs who have started vertical farming companies. And for those of you not familiar with vertical farming, it's this idea of like growing indoors in a climate controlled space, like starts with leafy greens, but now they're starting to branch out into other vegetables. You can do strawberries. I just spoke to a guy named Andrew Carter of Smallhold, who's doing mushrooms. So they're doing beautiful things. Virginia Emery of Beta Hatch is doing insects as feed, growing it inside as well. So just open up like all these different combinations of like people doing indoor stuff. And we launched a show and I was able to secure a sponsor, a company called Intelligent Growth Solutions based out of Scotland. I had an interview with the CEO at his home in Scotland, like right after COVID. And I said, oh, we're looking for sponsors for the show. He connected me to the marketing department. They're not going to conferences where they're paying 20 grand for, you know, booths anymore. So, you know, they have marketing dollars to spend. And so it's a thought experiment. If anyone out there wants to try it, if you need help producing, I think we can help. But, I launched the Vertical Farming Podcast and then we just published episode 10. We're just wrapping up our season one. And then we're going to be looking for sponsors for the new season. But it was just fascinating to see the access that I had to people at that level, because it just builds a chain reaction. Because you talk to a couple of CEOs and they're like, who else should I be speaking to? And they start making email intros to you. And then you're speaking to these other CEOs and they're just like, oh, you know, and you develop a name within a niche in an industry where like previously you hadn't been known, kind of like what I did with podcasting. Like, I've now like know people in the vertical farming space, which I don't think is a bad thing. And so I'm looking for other opportunities to maybe do something like that, like literally replicate that whole model, and maybe nanotechnology or something else. But the challenge is when you're a podcast host and you're also a podcast producer, is you have no shortage of ideas as well. So working on like ideas for new podcasts all the time, and also some other projects that are in stealth mode right now related to the podcasting community as a whole, what I like to call the podosphere. So stay tuned for those as well.
Yeah, I know you introduced me to the some of the podcasting folks at NASA Ames and their marketing team, and that turned into a tour of Kennedy Space Center when we were in Orlando for Podcast Movement. Podfest. Yeah, Podfest.
Yeah.
And that part of that tour was showing us their veggie program that they are doing, indoor farming on the International Space Station in preparation for colonies, in orbit around the moon, on the surface of the moon, Mars, you name it. That stuff is super early days. So, should make some of those reconnections with the folks at NASA to talk about veggie. That would be super cool.
Yeah, we should do that.
Yeah. So, I think we can talk for a long time. Any other questions for Harry Rock?
No, I just think after all these conversations we've had, whether it was on Squadcast or, you know, in hotel rooms or hotels rather for these events, you know, it's cool to capture them. Like you said earlier, like a time capsule for one of these conversations. You were gracious enough to have us on your show, Podcast Junkies. I think we were like episode 101, 102, somewhere around there, shortly after one of the Chase's episodes.
Yeah.
So thank you for being on the show, Harry. It's fun, and we got to capture more of this stuff.
Yeah, I think it's important, and I think it's just that moment in time. You know, everyone loves startup, like the fact that they literally captured every single recording of everything from the beginning. You can only imagine, like, if we had had the wherewithal to capture some of those poolside conversations or bar conversations. And there's nothing to say we can't do that. It's everything is remote now, but I think there is something interesting about the time capsule aspect of it, even if it's just listening to old episodes and seeing where we were. And it'll be fascinating for us to look at, you know, a year or 2 years from now, and you know, what's happened since then. And it's just I don't see myself ever giving up podcasting, because it feels just like a new superpower that I sort of like learned along the way and I'm trying to get better at every time. And it's opened up so many doors for me. It's incredible. Like, if I think about all the connections that I've made through the world of podcasting, the friendships and the relationships I've built, I'm really grateful.
Yeah, soon we'll be able to watch some of those videos.
Yes.
So yes,
exactly.
We'll leave it at that. Thank you so much, Harry, for joining us and being a great friend and advisor. We couldn't have gotten here without you.
Well, I appreciate having met you guys. However the stars align to connect us, and I see nothing but great things. And I think this is just the start of our friendship and working together. So I'm excited for what's to come as well.
More to come. Stay tuned.
This has been another episode of Between Two Mics with Zach and Rock from Squadcast.
The best way to record remote podcast interviews like today's in studio quality.
Visit bit.ly/squadpod to check out our resources page, where you can download your free remote interview checklist.